I'm Norma Everest, and I'm a professor at Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque. Yesterday, some of you were with us, and some of you were not. So we'll kind of dovetail with what happened yesterday, but move on to today. But I did bring the remnants of that group's work, and it was the group doing it, so it's all sorts of handwritings and whatever. I would like to refer to it, though, in at least this way. This whole week, we will be talking about Christians together living in a public world and using Robert Bellah, and today we'll be using Niebuhr, and using some of their classic themes to get a hold of this. And there's really no way to have the subject down pat because it continues to change. I find that Robert Bellah's material on American civil religion rings true, that indeed we do have in this society a religion different from and yet often enmeshed with the organized religions of this country, Christianity, Judaism, and others. And it is not just a religion in general, but that it has its specific, and this is what we were working out yesterday, its specific sacred writings, its sacred places, sacred writings, Declaration of Independence, Reader's Digest, Gettysburg Address, Constitution, Wall Street Journal, People Magazine, etc. We added a category, songs, and we didn't think make much longer that. Sacred places, White House, I think Disneyland is one, the place that it all have to go that somehow we hold as important in those for us. Sacred events or holy days, holidays, 4th of July, etc. Finding that indeed there is an American civil religion Christmas and a Christian Christmas. And the trying to figure out which one our family is celebrating is sometimes a bit confusing. Symbols, golden arches of McDonald's, the eagle, the rifle, the car, and so on. Rituals, going to McDonald's, football, goal, the kind of pace of rushing fireworks, Miss America, Amway, and so on. And then along with that, I know all of you can't see this, we have our own priests and prophets, Washington, Lincoln. Bellah makes the point that American civil religion has had two times of crisis. One was, of course, the Civil War, and Lincoln not only became a priest and a prophet, but also a martyr. And that the other, and that was the time of his first article on this, was the late 60s and early 70s. And so his book, The Broken Covenant, talks about that. And that was a time when, if you recall, even our newscasters said that our sacred writings, what about our Declaration of Independence? Would it get us through the Watergate trials? That somehow we were shaken to the foundations. Roosevelt, Lincoln, JFK, Walter Cronkite, depended upon to tell us the way it is. The Easter Bunny, Ronald McDonald, Santa Claus, various ones, Ann Landers. Robert Schuller, really, is the religion of the Crystal Cathedral is very, very much akin to the American dream and American civil religion. Those themes just carry, and that's his popularity is not surprising. Martyrs, Lincoln, JFK, we put Martin Luther King Jr. in parentheses because there's great debate whether or not his birthday should be a holiday or a street should be named after him, that he is a martyr in some way but really not claimed by all the people because black folk and Native Americans in our society were never really part of the American dream. We didn't quite ever know what to do with them, which is one of the problems in American civil religion. Saints, okay. And then we got to what I think is most important for our work here together, and that is what are the creeds? The phrases that we hear, maybe some of you thought of some more since yesterday. Be number one is an important creed. My country, right or wrong, don't be idle, you deserve a break today. And the meaning of those carries through, like you deserve a break today, or you shouldn't have to suffer. The ads for aspirin in the winter very much appeal to that. Buy aspirin, you shouldn't have to suffer. The meaning of be number one, that God is on our side. What's good for GM is good for America, is good for world, is good for space. We will progress, we are right. I'm not so much commenting on these phrases as saying that those really are the creeds. And at some gut level, at some very basic formative level, I believe this.
I have been formed by American civil religion. It is my other faith. And at some basic kind of gut level, I believe it and act out of it. I believe I shouldn't have to suffer. So, and then when we come to tenets of the Christian creed, we'll see that even though they may look alike on Christmas and Easter, there are some great differences. Suffering, the suffering servant, is the basic tenet of our Christian faith, and yet it's strange to American civil religion. Certainly repentance and forgiveness are at the heart and core of our Christian faith, but in American civil religion, there is no place for repentance. We did not know what to do at the end of the Vietnam War. And second, okay, and being number one, God is on our side. We'll say, those who are first are last, or God is for everyone, or God is on the side of the oppressed. It doesn't fit my other faith. And at some level, these are in tension inside of me, and I'm acting out of one faith or the other faith. And sometimes it causes me great perplexion because I want to act out of this Christian faith, but I have been shaped and formed experientially, programmed, if you will, to act out of this faith. So I'm responding at some level that it's my right not to suffer, so I won't take painkillers, etc., because, you know, whatever. Bootstrap philosophy, work yourself up and everybody can make it. Christian creed of grace and power that comes from grace. This idea that this land is our land. We are generous, but only up to a certain point. The Christian creed of one body, many members. And we worked quite a while on the whole symbolism of the Olympics, particularly the Olympic flame. It seemed to be, yes, a symbol of international, but American civil religion, where America is number one, that flame seemed to be, in many people's mind, American flame. You know, as it went across the country, someone said, like a freedom train. That became a marvelous kind of celebration. So all those winning of medals was just a reinforcement of a lot of the creeds of American civil religion. Well, if indeed that there is something to all of that, and as I say, I believe there is, and I think some folk here do, the question then we raise today is, then how do we respond? And here what I'd like to do is just to kind of go through Niebuhr's five types. Some of you have worked a great deal with Niebuhr, and some of you may have not read his book, Christ in Culture, so I would like to just go through it again. Many folk who have read Christ in Culture say, yeah, those five types, now what were they? So perhaps a little refresher is in order. And let me stand up here to do that. Through the years, 20 years or so, I found it useful. So it's not so much that maybe this is the absolute truth, but they seem helpful categories. One is Christ against culture, and I've symbolized it this way. Christ against culture is that whatever the customs and human achievement of the society in which the Christian lives, the Christian is opposed to those and feels very much that people are in danger of being corrupted. So culture is bad. Culture, and hereby culture Niebuhr means all that humans have made, the way we live, what we have made technologically, what we have made artistically, but not just culture in the sense of the arts. All that we are, our organizations that we've formed, the culture is that which we experience in the world in which we live. And therefore, very, in a sense, American civil religion is enculturated in us, is part of that world. Certainly, think of McDonald's and the Golden Arches and so on. So that culture is inherently evil and to be avoided. Historically, of course, let me flip back and forth between my pages here. Monasticism. Flee the world. Move to the caves. Or in our society, stay away from culture. I understand in one part of this country there's a Christian yellow pages, so that you only trade with businesses of people who are Christian. You only associate with Christian people. Others are not to be trusted. You will get stained. You will become sinful. Sin is not that which is inside, but that which is in the outside world, and you must stay away from it. Okay, Christ in culture, symbolized this way, just for our sake. There's, in this response, there is no great tension between culture and Christ. There is fundamental agreement between Christ and culture. Jesus is a good example in culture. The nature of Christianity is reasonable, not revolutionary. There is no great tension between Christ and culture. Culture needs to be inspired and improved. So the response is more of that nature, and again, not revolutionary. Niebuhr gives some examples of Christian Gnostics, Abelard, John Locke, Richard. Third one, Christ above culture. Culture is part of God's creation, but God is greater than. Christ is the fulfillment of cultural hopes. It is the end all. Christ is the fulfillment of cultural hopes, but something in him neither arises out of nor contributes to society. Christ enters culture from above. Christ is apart from, but the fulfillment of culture. And in this, Jesus is Lord. Jesus fulfills the law. If one obeys God, if you're a good person, you do acts of Christian love, you are working in culture, but Christ is above in the fulfillment. The fourth, Christ and culture in paradox, which is kind of hard to symbolize, but I did it that way. Human beings are sinful and live in God's good but fallen creation. God is gracious. In other words, Christ and culture in paradox takes seriously the evil nature of the world, in the sense that it is a fallen, sinful world, but the sin is inside as well as outside, so one cannot flee. But God, the good creator, who made the good creation in the first place, is the gracious God who redeems the world. And living in that tension of the culture, sinner and saint, those paradoxes, is a characteristic of this time. And the fifth for Niebuhr is Christ, the transformer of culture. Creation culture is good, has been corrupted, but there is good hope, good possibility for it being transformed. All we really need to do is get together and work on it. Christ and Christians convert culture. There is no turning from self to God except in society. In other words, this Christian does not leave culture but seeks to change it. So the Christian does not turn away, but seeks to do that task. Christ, in this sense, is redeemer and healer, and lives with people in their distress and helps change their condition now. So great emphasis on that. Okay, I'm going to stop at that point. And I have some other examples, but I think it would be more interesting for us to put forth examples as we see them in culture today. Do you see any of these types in Christians that you know? What have you observed? What responses to culture have you observed that Christians take in this culture? Okay. I didn't know that before. You've seen them. I've just heard about them.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea, associate only with don't do these things, don't dance, don't do this, don't do this, because you might sin. It's not that it's in you, it's something that's going to happen to you if you are not real careful.
I'm going to put it like this, see what you think.
It's the moral majority. In other words, the very fact that they want to be the majority, not so much interested in changing social action, changing, helping the hurts of the world, but they want to be the majority. They want to be the Christ in culture. We would like culture and Christ to be in harmony. They'd like that Christian Yellow Pages to get bigger, I'm guessing, huh? But the moral piece that has evil out there puts them against culture. Is that?
The moral majority is neither.
Okay. Do this. And so a lot of legislative activity, for example, at least on the part of some, I can't lump them all together. Go ahead, Becky.
I was just thinking of the Quakers, Mennonites, the Amish as Christ against culture, not in a negative term, but in the to be at least avoid that.
Okay.
Amish, Mennonites. Free church, maybe.
And here, even Niebuhr isn't all real neat with his example, so we won't worry about that.
And here have set themselves a, okay, the golden arches go around, but you don't have to go to McDonald's. Even TV, for example. Yeah, they've set themselves a community to live a peaceable life within culture that is set apart, distinctly set apart. Yeah. There are other kinds of examples of that, that of people who believe that the public school is the evil place, and a lot of movement across the country for people to educate their own children. And you can get mail order curriculum to do so. And a lot of court cases. Tomorrow evening, I'm looking forward to presenting among the group here at 7 o'clock. I don't know where we are, some another room, I think. What I believe is true in that, I think that the public school is a symbol of this crisis in American civil religion. A lot of issues get dumped and focused right there. And here's an example of that particular one. I don't know enough about Jehovah's Witness. I mean, I know a bit, come to my door, but I don't know enough to where I would put them. Others want to respond to that? Let me read another piece. I was trying to help make this clear for some materials, curriculum materials I was writing for the LCA. Use an example of Chris Eilers. To see these possibilities, we look at Chris Eilers. Chris taking seriously the ministry of the whole people of God meets the world. Chris works in a local department store. Married and the parent of three children, Chris has lived in this community throughout adulthood. If Chris adheres to the Christ against culture mode, the world is seen as inherently evil and the task is to convert people away from the world to the Christian way of life. Chris is disturbed by the shoplifting which goes on and is sure that if these young people were in Christian youth fellowship, they would not be doing such things. Chris meets the public every day and occasionally engages someone in a conversation about religion. Secular humanism invading the schools is a typical subject. Chris, in general, doubts the worldly values of people who spend much of their time window shopping and coveting items more expensive than they can buy, and is happy to return home after work to associate with other Christians from church. If Chris Eilers adheres to the Christ of culture mode, Chris sees the goal of ministry as achieving a peaceful, cooperative society. Chris tries to be a good, kind person, a responsible citizen, and a faithful worker in this community establishment. Enjoying conversations with the people one meets each day, Chris thinks of Jesus' life and teachings as the highest human achievement and a guide for our own life. Chris actively participates in many community activities. You know that, Chris Eilers? If Chris adheres to the Christ above culture mode, the Christian life and the life in the world do not so closely agree. Rather, Christ enters into human life from above and perfects the human life. Chris works hard, tries to maintain a high ethical standard, and is very concerned that their children maintain proper Christian conduct at school. Chris interacts with culture and sees good works as an important good example in the world. This is an important ministry. If Chris adheres to the Christ and culture in paradox mode, the relationship between the Christian and the world is always in tension. The Christian is both sinner and saint. Chris sees the wrongs of those who steal and the wrongs which are not as obvious, those who make unjust profits on the merchandise, but also is very aware of the sinful motivations and struggles going on inside the very self. Chris knows their own kids may have problems too, just as do the shoplifting kids of other people. Chris returns to the Christian community for forgiveness and strength and then goes back to work, realizing that ministry in the world is a complex thing. If Chris adheres to the Christ, the transformer of culture mode, the task of ministry is not to turn people away from the evil world, but to convert the culture. Chris is very much involved in a community youth project, convinced that they will be able to find answers to the current drug problems. Chris sees human beings as essentially good, but corrupted by the fall. Chris sees as ministry applying the Christian gospel to solve problems of the economy, injustice, and war. Is that helpful, any? Any people? Did you meet yourself there in any of those? Maybe I should ask that one. Do you see yourself in any of these? Or maybe more than one place? Part of partly a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer out loud, but, yeah. Or, and let's make the question a little more complex. Do you agree with any of these intellectually, but do you find yourself acting out of that one or out of another one at times? And then maybe another question, which ones of these do you see at work in your congregation? Which stances? You do? Okay. And is that part of the reason it's hard for people to understand one another in the congregation? Niebuhr puts Lutherans in number four. At least puts Luther there, which may be different than putting Luther's there. Put St. Paul there as well. Huh? You read the Romans? Martin Luther, he also, again, Niebuhr, I have to go back and really see what Niebuhr's saying, sort of puts Kierkegaard and Roger Williams there. In the Christ Above culture, Niebuhr puts Clement of Alexandria, Thomas Aquinas, and I'd say many Roman Catholics, really, in the Christ Above culture kind of sense. And in Christ the Transformer of culture, Niebuhr puts Augustine, John Calvin, John Wesley, Jonathan Edwards, and you might debate those a bit. But you know of many Christians and many Christian groups for whom social action... Well, you look at the confirmation practices of congregations. When I taught at Yale, we had numbers of different students in our courses, and we would talk about parish ministry and teaching confirmation. We had quite different goals. Now that I teach at Wartburg, we have more unified goals of what confirmation ministry is. In the UCC church, it was to become acquainted with the history of your congregation. That... Because the congregational stance, confirmation was becoming confirmed in that congregation. The Methodists would go out and observe some social action that was going on in the community. Now, not that Lutherans don't also do that, but they'd say, Lutherans go to confirmation for 2 years? You know, they couldn't believe this. So it was interesting to see the different approaches. In the Christ and Culture and Paradox is a very difficult stance to hold. For Chris Eilers, for ourselves. If we look at faith development, I know some of you have studied James Fowler and some, even Kohlberg, some faith development folk. If you look at stages of faith, you will see that the stage of paradox is a stage five in their terms and takes a maturity of adulthood that most of us don't reach. So to live in that paradox in a mature way and to act out of it is very, very difficult. And we often, we resolve the tension and don't really act in that paradox. The Christ against culture is an easier one to live in. It, in Kohlberg's terms of adherence to authority, the majority of the American public, the majority of any public, is in that, you know, you just do what the authority tells you. So the reactionary faiths are the ones that grow. Pastor tells you you can't do this, so we don't do this. It solves problems in a complex world very easily. You don't have to figure all this out. Christ against culture. The Christ in culture one is also somewhat easier to deal with. You just kind of go along with what is there. The Christ above culture, you just try to be good. And that in faith development language is also, you know, that's what we grow up doing, trying to be good. Following Jesus is a good example. The Christ, the transformer of culture, takes an action. And the faith development folk would put that in the stage of early adulthood when somehow we want to go out and change the world. The young adult. And so we see in our society it is often the youth who catch hold of the dreams of transforming culture. And sometimes they get discouraged with us middle-aged folk because we still don't have that fire. Or maybe we wonder what happened to our own fire. And faith development folk would say, well, that's because we're at a different stage of adulthood. It's not as if we don't see the problems anymore, but we're able to live with paradox. We're able to live with that tension. The world isn't going to be made perfect. But we're still in there trying. Now, the adult who kind of despairs kind of gives up. But to live in that paradox, really, the Christian living in paradox is a middle adulthood stage. So I'm putting a couple of disciplines together here, but sociologists and anthropologists and psychologists can tell us some interesting things. All that I am saying, it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to figure out. And I think it is helpful to think about, again, our own congregations and why in an adult forum. We'll say, well, let's go out and start a soup kitchen or something. And they say, no, let's not do that at all. Those folk, they deserve the trouble they got into. They didn't work themselves up by their bootstraps. They are to be avoided. If we have them in our church, we might become like them. So the Christ against culture kind of mode is coming out. So even though a particular doctrine or a particular faith stance meets one of these modes, each individual also has a mode, and sometimes more than one. While you're thinking of some more things to say, let me share some what I see as some problems with each, and maybe you'll see different ones. I stapled these pages together backwards, which doesn't help. I think one of the problems with the Christ against culture mode is that we can't totally withdraw from culture. We really can't. However, there's been some contributions in history. Monasticism, in turning away from the world, became one of the great conservers and transmitters of culture. The irony of that, in fleeing, were the ones who conserved much. Interesting. Very interesting. I won't make conclusions yet. It's impossible to make a line between Christ's holiness and the world's sinfulness. I think it's impossible to draw a line between me and others, as though those are the sinful folk, and I am the one who's been saved. And sin is out there, and sin is not in me. I think that's one of the problems of Christ against culture. Maybe some of you will want to see some other contributions of that as well. Well, even some that we talked about, the Amish, there are some things that we can learn from, a simple way of life. There's a witness that comes back to us by those Christians who set themselves apart from the world for a while. Christ in culture. In Christ in culture mode, I think that the radical nature of sin is lost. And we often end up recasting Jesus to make him more acceptable. And one can sell out or be co-opted. So we give out Easter bunnies at Easter. I mean, so what's the difference? It's all kind of the same. We can be co-opted. One of the contributions of that stance is that Jesus influences the whole world and not just a small band of Christians. You're going to be in the world, in every place in the world. There's no place you can't be. So the possibility of Christians affecting the world is greater. And perhaps because it's more subtle, it might even be more easy to take than Christ, the transformer of culture. There may be some marvelous witnessing that goes on just because people are feeling comfortable in their world, rather than somebody's out there trying to change it. In the Christ above culture, I think that there gets to be a grading of Christians based on good works and an institutionalization of Christ in the gospel. A grading of Christians. You're attaining higher, the better Christians. So-and-so is a better Christian. You hear people in our congregation saying that kind of a thing, or operating out of that stance. One of the contributions is that the good Christians do as they move toward God also positively affects the world. I have studied with Sister Maria Gusta Neal, a Roman Catholic sister and sociologist, and to study in her class just kind of blows my mind, because she just assumes that we have a total responsibility for every country and for the whole country. I mean, there is an idea of Christ as Lord of the earth that the Roman Catholics have pulled off better than Lutherans have, really. That, well, of course we have to be concerned about the government in this country and et cetera. That Christ is above culture. And you're concerned about those things. There's the universality of Christ in the church. Christ in culture in paradox. I think the problem is that the ambiguity of living paradoxically is difficult to maintain. Although we are poised for action, we sometimes become culturally conservative. We may see what we have to do, but it's just so hard to pull off because we know the problems and we know the depth of sin. We are not naive. I think this is one of the most helpful things that the Lutherans in the New Lutheran Church can contribute to the public world. If becoming a New Lutheran Church means we are going to become more public and not so much ethnic, is that I think we can see the depth of human problems, the depth of sin. We are not naive and think, oh, we'll just work hard, it'll get better. At the same time, the power of the gospel and the power that is in Christians because of the freedom of the cross, that view of humankind is desperately needed in a world, in a country, that either wants to despair or is living by this creed that we're getting better and better and doesn't know what to do about a world of scarcity, or a world that might want to win some medals at the Olympics as well. So we, that kind of American civil religion, where's that going? But Christ and Culture and Paradox can see both the problem of human sin and the power of the gospel. The problem is that seeing it means that we often kind of get, you know, just frozen in place and don't know how to act out of it. I'd be interested to see what you say in a moment. Christ, the transformer of culture, is one of the problems is discouragement when culture does not change or when new problems arise. 10 years of our ministry was inner city. So a lot of people come and go. Come and go. When the city didn't change that quickly. And to stay there, the staying power with the Christ, the transformer of culture, is a real problem. Contribution is the deep involvement in the world in helping ways.
Last week I was driving and I was listening to what was a Christian radio station.
Yeah.
And I don't know where the program is coming from. And whoever this man was that was being interviewed by two other men was saying that the churches all must get involved this year in voter registration. That it was imperative that the Christian voice be heard at election time. And then, you know, it got worse from there. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with Christians being, I mean, I think we should all.
Yeah.
But then it got into, you know, the whole idea that, and they didn't mention anybody by name, but saying things like, we have a vice presidential candidate who would say she is against abortion personally, but could not push her views on anything. Now, we know that that kind of thing cannot happen in America, you know, that's un-Christian and so on. And so it went, you know, downhill from there, and how important it was to re-elect a Christian president. And I kept thinking, what if somebody listened to that?
Well, people do.
I mean, like me, and you know, but if they didn't have any other Christian voice to hear, and thought that that was what all Christians believed, I think that could be so detrimental to the spread of the gospel among people who are searching for some kind of, I don't know what, some kind of direction in life. To think that all Christians were that close-minded, or that there was only one way. I mean, to remove all the paradox about it. I mean, there was only one. I mean, you were going to register people so they could vote for one party, and that's it. And, you know, that was just appalling to me, and yet I thought, how do the rest of us in culture make our voices also heard? I mean, it seems to me, and I don't listen to that station that often, but that's the only message that's getting through on that station. Mm-hmm. Where do the rest of us in culture who believe ourselves as Christian and who also think that we have a responsibility for trying to make our government the best it can be to help the world, where is our voice heard? I mean, I don't know. It bothers me.
Doesn't some of that go back to where, I guess on number one, where you said people don't have to think under that religion? The answers are very simple. It seems like in politics we've become very single-issue oriented. Unions. I'm a teacher, but I don't always agree that when the teacher union endorses somebody simply because of their stance on education, I feel we have to look at the whole candidate. But it's so popular to focus in on somebody that's either for it or against abortion, for or against gun control, and Christians are on that same bandwagon.
Some Christians.
Yeah.
Not all.
I didn't say all.
Yeah, but the other side of that is that that's a reaction, you know, that right-wing philosophy, get them out, get vote, and vote Republican, because of the other kind of things going on in the country. That's my, you know, that's my only hope for that whole thing. Is I know that Jackson and the minorities and the women are going to come out on the Democratic side. They're getting on the bandwagon late. You know which side I'm on.
She didn't even say they told which side to vote for. I think it's helpful to know that some people really do think this way, other than the way I think. Just as in, and that sounds so simple, doesn't it? But just as in faith development, those folk tell us it is very difficult to even to conceive of how someone else, you know, constructs their world. It really is. But to at least know it, and to at least know that these are historic and present Christian stances, which Niebuhr, you know, tries to write very objectively, have validity. They exist. They really exist. And have had their place in history. But at least to know, I mean, say, how can somebody think that way? And they do. It is their response to culture. Yes.
I always think of the example of Anita Bryant. I don't know how much.
There's a little noise downstairs, so you can talk
about it. I think of Anita Bryant, who was out after gays, but she had the whole world, you know, her whole world was rosy. And then one day her marriage fell apart. And, you know, I had to feel sorry for her. And at the same time, I thought, okay, now come back into the real world and find out that everything, you know, get off your rose-colored glasses. But if somebody who waits, I don't know how much time and effort and all was going on, and you don't hear too much about Anita Bryant going out after any labeled group anymore. And that's kind of a, I'm not saying it's a, you know, Peter experience, the road to Damascus experience, although it has its similarities.
Well, the language you used as to come back into the world was an interesting phrase, and the language you used a moment ago was, again, sort of combining things, that somehow America needs, see the combination with, here we put moral majority there together. The combination that what we see needs is then right for America. It's right for GM, America, the world, and space, probably, too. Those patterns of logic are what I think are important to think about. An example, Britt and I were trying to think of an example of what one would do with television as a cultural medium in these various modes. See if this is what would fit with you. The Christ Against Culture, one would get rid of the TV set. Christ in Culture, well, and you know, see these, they kind of come together in a way. Christ in Culture, one would enjoy good Christian TV programs. They're the Christian radio station. Or copy TV talk show format for religious programming. So that, and here it's the Christ against culture, moving to the Christ in culture, so that a lot of the kind of, what do you call it, the TV talk show, name some of them that you see.
60.
Well, no, not 60 minutes.
You mean the Christian one?
Oh, the Christian?
What?
No.
PTL
Network. Some of this programming, which is very much like, I mean, patterns itself right after Donahue in 60 Minutes.
We don't get it.
It copies that. So that they're trying to be against culture and then claim culture for their own, their network. Okay. The Christ Above Culture would add specifically religious programming to TV, such as the 5-minute devotionals. You kind of, you know, put a little cap on it. Or the half-hour Christian story, those kinds of things. Christ in Culture and Paradox would use TV but also critique it. see all aspects of the medium as value for theological reflection. The ads, the violence, all of those, they would watch the day after and think about it and respond to it, saying that Christ, the Christian message, can interact with any of that medium. Christ, the transformer of culture, would attempt to change, reform TV and change the programming. So that one, I don't, maybe some of you disagree with that, but that's just one example. Where do some of you find your own tensions? Where do some of us find our own tensions with this? Do we find ourselves being pulled one way or another in these stances?
Well, right now I'm finding the Christ in culture. I think that sometimes you get so far away, everything is okay, that you kind of lose hold of what the Bible doesn't say. And so then, I'm being tough right now, right? So then I kind of go back to number one, where at least they have something to say, but knowing also that there is a real world. So kind of really torn, I guess. I know that, to me, of course I was raised in the church for a while, but I do know before.
Yeah, we name that one, yeah.
Right.
I'll put up my hand for that one.
But we're not in Lutheran church right now, just because of location. And the church we're in, we're finding more as number two, or at least I am.
Uh-huh.
And what's against what we've taught us about the Lutheran church. And for, so there is a real difference.
Mm-hmm. That's very helpful.
And I have a lot of friends in the other churches which would be more number one. And I can also understand what they're saying, at least, you know, at least in revolting against, I guess, getting away from the Bible, at least if they, well, at least they're looking at the Bible for what it's trying to tell us. Mm-hmm. And so.
Congregations have a lot of trouble with us being the kind of the number four category. When the Church of Ours in convention comes down with statements on peace and statements on social justice, the congregations, if they get to it at all, they have a lot of difficulty with, you know, their church saying that.
Yeah. Yeah, and a statement is to be thought through in that congregation from on high, and so that Christ is above culture. It must be the thing we're supposed to do, or here the authority is very clear. So to take those, that's a very helpful example, to take those statements and work on them in the Christ and culture and paradox in an adult forum is difficult, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Either against it. When you were saying that, it was very, very helpful that this Christ in culture. That's why I think the American civil religion thing is helpful to think about. Because we do live in both faiths. And to somehow put them side by side to say, oh, I get clear, which of these am I living out of? Which am I living out of? Because it's very tempting to live in the Christ in culture. Faith and Ferment, book out this past year. Any of you know that one, which is a study of Lutherans and lots of other kinds of Christians in Minnesota, and studying what the faith stances of the church are and what the Christians really believe. And the title, Faith and Ferment, is an interesting one. And saying how we're probably much more shaped and formed by the changes in culture than the church actually making a change in a stance on an issue. So we have changed on divorce, et cetera, over the years, because somehow the ethic of the culture has changed, and that has had more formative power than a congregation or a church body deciding, now we're gonna make this ethical stance. But what some of the things they found is that often it is the pastor or certain lay leaders who are acting out of this stance, and much of the congregation acting out of this stance, okay, and not
healthy paradox happening, but some other kinds of stress and acting. And both kind of legitimately being the Christian in the world that they see in their stance on relationship to Christ and culture. And people here cannot understand Christ the transformer of culture, people. Really can't. It's so much easier. You know, just go out there and be a good citizen. Of course we'll vote.
Yeah. I think part of the living in paradox that's bothersome too is the fact that you have some who say, that everything in the Bible is absolutely true, and anybody who veers from an inch is wrong or going to hell or whatever terms they want to use. Which I think we can still live with if we also don't deny that God is still at work in the world today and is giving us messages today just as he gave us messages in the scripture long ago. So that, I think, for a Christian, puts us in a paradox also in some ways, because I think of Lutherans Alert or somebody who now are very much on criticizing other members of the Lutheran Church because they don't teach the inerrant, I don't know what it is, something about the Bible. Anyway, every dot and tittle is right or something. But I just think that the Lord is still at work. I don't think he quit after the Bible was first published, or printed. And so to live in that paradox, to think that maybe God is telling us another word for our time, not denying that the truth or the inerrancy of the scripture, but that God is still at work, I think puts us in a paradox.
Well, and if we put liberation theology here, I think there can be some liberation theology here as well. It's just not quite as neat. You got to stop and think along the way a little bit more. Yeah, you think of, we put the role of Christ, but what is God still doing in each of these? Yes, God is still Lord of the world. Does that move you to action? Well, maybe. This one can move us to action or not. This one, of course, moves us to action, and there is indeed a sense that God is out there ahead of us already. The healer is out there, right? Christ, the incarnate one, I think, fits here quite well. Even though by Lutheran tradition we fit here, I don't think it's an unhealthy thing for us to have some of each of these in us. At various points in my life or in my day, this mode is showing.
Maybe we don't want the weeds to grow along with the wheat. Last week's parable, I think it's always a funny one that we're, no matter what one we find ourselves in, we're usually trying to pull out the weed. Mm-hmm. And I think Jesus' parable is a good one for us for last week.
Well, this one up here, of course, all weeds except me.
Right.
I find weed and stay away because I might catch
you. The only trouble is you destroy the wheat also when you pull them out. Yeah. So something. Well, that's what I find it. I work at PLU, and I find all five of those models somewhat active in one form or another. Especially in the transformation side, you see sometimes the top one against culture, and often a great movement in a matter of 3 or 4 years of different ways of traveling through those.
Of the young people there.
Yeah.
Speak more about that. I think that's very useful.
Well, when I first came there, I was so floored by it. I thought the whole world went conservative on me.
Well, you were gone.
Yeah, when I was gone, I knew where I was. But what I found was if they were given, strangely enough, the graciousness of God, which they could not hear, they could move and they could grow. But when we often want to protect them, they call PLU sometimes the loot dome, where this plastic dome sits right over the school, and Parkland, which is a very poor, low middle class, we have a military installation surrounding us. We have all of what we say culture is, and yet we don't want to be enculturated. We're very Scandinavian and Germanic by background, and Lutheran for the most part. So a lot of the students, they look at themselves and are protected, which a university should do, but
they don't know how to get out of the dome. And you see the tension among the Christians, the Christians among the Christians.
Not unlike what you said, how do we hold the village? Suzanne de Dietrich, a Christian laywoman theologian, has written a book called The Witnessing Community, which is a sort of a history of God's people who continue to come apart from the world and go back into it again. And you see that. I mean, the coming apart, not coming apart, but going apart together and going back. So indeed, a place like Holden, a place in my life, like Christian University, for example. But how would that dome have blackness you can see through it at least at the same time? It gets, particularly if a main mode is Christ and transforming, very, very tiring. And I see the folk who have stayed in the inner city are those who live in community. Often some of the orders, Roman Catholic sister orders, that are still there. Because they have that community, maybe that prayer life, that ordered daily life, that can pull them back together, and then to go forth again. And that rhythm is a very helpful one. But it's fascinating when you talk about the young adult, because indeed when a decade and a half ago, they weren't being contained at all in the university. We were burning it down or on the streets or whatever. Christ the Transformer. And then where some of those folk have now gone, some of them back here have moved this direction, some here, and indeed some who are here can move other places. But while we're moving from one another, we do a lot of bumping into each other. See? Just about time to stop for supper. Is this Niebuhr Revisited helpful to think about? I find it helpful, and again, to not just put up our hands and vote for one or the other, but to see, historically, so I can. Well, in Lutherans, most of us as Lutherans, we're not really trained very objectively in other Christian faiths. usually trained to know what was wrong with their stance. So for us to see these have been valid, they are real stances in history, and that they live. Many of these live in me in any given day. On Thursday, I may be more one than another on Monday. And it's certainly within our congregation, partly because of just we're different people, but also because of faith development stages, that we may be more one of these than another, and it's very difficult for us to understand one another.